Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with poet Nicole Iden, whose new collection is I Am One of You. We'll also hear from Chris Smith, who's putting together the second annual Jefferson Parish Library Literary Festival, the Mystery Writers and Readers Festival, August 6th. And I'll have some historical fiction for your beach book bag. Nicole Iden makes many things. She makes films, she makes pies, and she's here today to talk about making poems. Her first book, I Am One of You, has just been published, and one of her poems, Mortgage, placed in the Women's National Book Association Writing Contest. Nicole, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thanks for having me, Susan.
So happy to have you here. Now, you're from Ohio. You came to New Orleans in 1999. What was it that drew you south?
Well, I came here because I had been cold. I was living in Edinburgh, Scotland, and I wanted to go to film school. So I applied to a couple film schools in warm areas, and I came and visited New Orleans. My friend lived here. She was an archaeologist at the time and just made me excited about all these interesting aspects of New Orleans I would have overlooked possibly on a quick visit.
The right guide makes such a difference, doesn't it?
Yes.
You know? So you started off as a filmmaker, but when did you start writing poems?
I definitely started writing as a young child. I wrote plays, poems, stories. But I got serious about writing poems in undergraduate. I was a video production major officially, but I poured all my energy into my creative writing poetry classes with my professors at Ohio University.
Ah, so how long did it take you to put together the poems for this book?
They are from a period of years. There are a few early adult poems, not many, that still resonate with me, so maybe just a few from my mid-20s, but most of them are from just before Katrina till now, mm-hmm. I would say.
And you're a relatively new mom, and that seems to have made a profound difference in your subject matter.
Before I had a child, I was afraid that having a child would restrict my creative life. And I've really found the opposite to be true. And that's been really empowering. And I always share that with other people. I have written more since becoming a mom than in the years just previous to that.
It's an amazing transformation. It really is.
It is.
And you've dedicated this book to your grandmothers, and one of them is on the cover, this wonderful picture of a basketball team, which I love. And you talk a lot about them in terms of finishing things, finished projects, unfinished projects as a form of hope. So talk about them. I mean, I think so many women are looking back and finding grandmothers as such an important influence. I know I have.
I think I was very stereotypical in a lot of ways that as a child and growing up, I really identified with my dad more. He was more public than my mom in personality and in, not necessarily in work, but definitely in personality. And it took me a long time to really see myself in my mother and value those things. And that then trickled up to really seeing where that came from, which was both of my grandmothers who were very different and I had very different relationships with them. But I've really been able to see both of them as full people as I've aged.
And you talk about them teaching you to live a consequential life. I wish you'd talk a little bit about that.
That's a hard one. I mean, that's really hard to put into words. It's more of a feeling. But I definitely, it was easy for me to see in my Grandma Johnson, who's the one on the cover. She played sports from a young age. The photo is from 1929. She went to college, all these things that were really inspiring. And she was just a calm presence. I lived with her when my father was sick. It was really easy for me to see that in her daily life and what she did with her time. My grandmother, Iden, had a more difficult life. But when I reflected back at all the choices she's made and just hearing stories from my dad, it really touched my heart how she made her life her own and always helped other people even when she was in need.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've developed all these skills in so many different areas, you know, it's filmmaking, pie baking, writing poems. How do these all transfer? How do they all work together for you in your writing life?
I've been trying to answer that question for myself a lot this past year. It's definitely something I'm proud of and struggle with. I definitely see myself as a writer first. And so when I make the pies, each pie has a story. And that's sort of how I enter in. I write a poem to describe each pie. And I find that really brings the pie alive for me.
You have this wonderful line in one of your poems, to really go at the heart of the day again and again. And that's sort of what you're doing, aren't you?
I like the way you pulled that line out. I think that line says it better than I could right now. I like to make things. I like to make things with my hands, but I also, you know, like to make words come together.
Definitely. And you also have this great talent for close observation, for detail, for really looking at something, which I think is so lovely.
Thank you. The particular is where truth can be found in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. So read Mortgage for us, if you would.
Thank you. I would be honored to. Mortgage. This house that we built is lovely. Here I sleep next to you every night. Remember when we were unfamiliar? I had a plump life. You had a plump life. We were busy with our things. We tried to be loved by other people. Remember that messy life? But then, as they say, we got together. We had sex every day. Who knew when I would ask the wrong question, the instant you would turn dull? But you weren't scared of scrambled eggs. You were keen to walk the dog. And now, here we are every night. It's after midnight, sapped from balancing plates, people all night for cash, exhausted from nailing floorboards and keeping hair off the tub. My calves ache and I don't want to give. It's the end of the month. Is there enough for the mortgage? I want to buy a hardback atlas, the book that split the Germanies, took me to the USSR, pressed my kindergarten watercolors, proved my humble town existed. The atlas is $80. But we need toothpaste. I want to see a movie. Can't, there's not enough. It's the end of the month. I move away from you. Find your own dinner. Do you want something, or are you just hugging me goodnight? The first comes. We pay the mortgage. Another month. You reach out again. Your hand says, come here. All weighty words fall second to the comfort we create. I don't wonder what you want. I quickly kiss you hard.
I love that poem, Nicole. I really do. These poems are so rooted in the everyday, in relationships, and they're very welcoming to the reader, I think. Is that what you set out to do?
I love that. That's what I want when I read a poem. I love to read a poem and enter in immediately. I mean, some poems certainly take more work, but I think upon first read, I should be in there. I can get more from reading again and again, but I want to be welcomed in. I really like that. Thank you.
So much of it is about the fierceness of love, you know, for our significant others, for our children, for our families, for our friends, too. You have wonderful poems about friendship in this collection.
I'm an only child, and I grew up with friends, and I keep them like family to me, and I really nurture those relationships.
It's going to be fun for you to take this book out into the world, isn't it?
I am excited. You know, it's definitely a new thing, but I really want to read the book aloud to other people. That's part of poetry, and I'm excited to do that.
Whenever I read a book of poems, I have to read it aloud, or at least some of them. And I've found my dogs have been very attentive to your work, so that's a high compliment.
That is a high compliment. Thank you.
Oh, we've been talking with poet, pie baker, and filmmaker Nicole Iden, whose wonderful new book is I Am One of You. You can meet her Sunday, August 7th at 2 p.m. at Garden District Bookshop, or Wednesday, August 10th at 6 at Maple Street Bookshop. Nicole, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Susan.
Yeah, I'm one of you. Yeah, I'm one of you.
Chris Smith is one of those all-around guys who makes literary things happen in New Orleans. He's the adult programming manager at the Jefferson Parish Library. He volunteers at the Tennessee Williams New Orleans Literary Festival. And he was one of the first men to join the Women's National Book Association of New Orleans. Now he's in his second year producing a literary festival at the Jefferson Parish Library. And he's here to tell us about it. Chris Smith, happy to have you back.
Thank you very much.
Now, that first literary festival took place last year, and it was devoted to Katrina books. It was the 10th anniversary, and there was a lot to talk about. But you've gone in a different direction this year.
This year, we're doing a mystery writers and readers festival, and it's called What's So Mysterious About New Orleans. In a way, it kind of accomplishes two things. It's about mysteries that have been written in or about New Orleans. But at the same time, it's about New Orleans as a character in a mystery or any other kind of book, really.
And New Orleans is a character in so many mysteries, you know. I can testify to that.
It is a major character. We have a lot of mystery writers who live here now. It's amazing how many authors we have here. But, you know, we have so many musicians and artists and authors are in the mix. And so part of the purpose of this festival is to acquaint readers with people who write mysteries, many of whom they may not even know.
Now, all of this takes place Saturday, August 6th at the East Bank Regional Library, and you're starting off at 9:30 with this talk by Harriet Swift, New Orleans and the detective novel, Why So Few? Now, Chris, I thought that was a joke when I read it, because to me, there are so many.
You would know, too. Well, this is my friend Harriet.
I love Harriet.
She lives down in Bywater. I met Harriet first time at Dog Park in Bywater. And actually, the hurricane after Katrina, the year after, I evacuated to her house, which is in Monroeville, Alabama. And so tried to stalk Harper Lee, got no cooperation with that. But anyway, Harriet wrote this paper 20 years ago this year, for a mystery magazine. And the theory of it is that here we have this great city. It's got all these very unusual characters. It's got art. It's got architecture. It's got everything you need. But really, there aren't that many mysteries set here. So I kind of thought about that for a while and thought, well, gosh, she might be good for this festival. And so that's what she's talking about. And people can come and they can disagree with her if they want. We've got James Lee Burke. You know, we have quite a few big mystery people, but not probably compared to a San Francisco or a New York or maybe another major city. So that's what that's about.
That's going to be fun. I mean, it does make you sort of want to sit down and count them all up, doesn't it? I mean.
Well, the interesting thing is that there is no shortage of crime in this city, and unusual crime at that. So it would be good. And maybe that's why.
Yeah.
Maybe the truth is stranger than fiction.
Well, I hope she's updated it for the last 20 years. I'll give Harriet a hard time. And then at 10:30... Harriet's talk will be followed by a panel about New Orleans as a mystery character.
We have local authors who are talking about books that they have written that are set in New Orleans. Colleen Mooney is one. Met her through Romance Writers. Laura Cayute is another one. She's, I think, fairly new back in the city. She's an actress.
Wonderful.
And she's written
actress.
A cozy.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't have a murder in it, and it really doesn't have a detective. It's an interesting, it's kind of a hybrid cozy. Kent Westmoreland, who created the Burley Drummond character for Barone Street, and Alexandria Weiss. She's got a great history and a book, but one of the interesting things about her is that she's a wildlife rehabber. So I want to have her for another program after this.
She does good deeds and she writes. I mean.
And moderated by Jean Redman, who's now R. Jean Reed.
Yes.
But she has a new mystery out and it's going off in a completely different direction than her former series of mysteries.
I know. So, it's such a good book, too. Yeah. And then I love it that you have a panel about New Orleans authors writing about other places.
We have authors who have spent time in other places, and that's what they use as their settings. Barbara Coley, she's got both. She's got so many books out. She doesn't have one currently, but she has such a backlist. Carl Baker has his first book out. It's called 14 Days in July, and his book is set at the time of the French Revolution, as well as 135 years before the French Revolution. He lives in Slidell. He's very interesting. He's a retired physician. He's a retired neurosurgeon. And he splits his time between, I kid you not, Slidell and Monte Carlo.
Whoa, nice.
Bill Lofelm. His newest book is set here in New Orleans, but he has a series set in Staten Island. And then Steve Patrick, who's a really cool guy, he came to the library to be in one of the writers' groups that we have there. And his first book was a Jack the Ripper story. Uh-huh. He's a retired naval officer, and he is just about to submit his third book, I think.
That's a nice range of people. Yeah. And then you're ending up with a masterclass by Michael Allen Zell.
We have a masterclass. He's a really good teacher. Everybody in his family is a teacher. He operates Crescent City Books, which has just moved right across the street from the Roosevelt Hotel. And his title is Take a Walk in a Wild City, New Orleans' character. And he also starts with the premise that there's a lot of crime here. And so
sad, we laughed.
I know we're used to it. But it's a master class. So it is for people who would like to be interested in the mystery genre, you know, by writing one. But that's one thing I would like to say. This festival is not just for mystery writers, but it's for anybody who reads mysteries or who wants to be connected. It's a great opportunity. You have these authors sitting right there in front of you, and you can talk to them. They're all accessible.
And it's all free.
It's all free. Everything at the library is free of charge, open to the public.
Yeah. And I'm curious, are you a mystery fan yourself? Is that something you like to read?
If I had to pick one, I would go for historical mysteries. The Name of the Rose type of thing. Big, fat books. Perez Reverte. I like his books. Uh-huh. I grew up reading Leon Uris and stuff like that. So I do like them. Yes.
And how does this fit into the overall mission of the library? You all do so much programming on so many different subjects. So it's really nice to have this big event.
The whole library model has changed in our lifetimes. When we were kids, we would go to the library and we would get a book or get a bunch of books. Well, that's the library of long ago. Now a library is almost, it's more like a community center. And it provides so many functions, especially for people who do not have access to certain things like computers or the internet. We have databases. People can come in. The library is a great resource for people who are looking for jobs. Well, we have all kinds of databases besides that. We have genealogy. We have car repair. We have homework help. We have all these kinds of things. Plus, we have a huge collection of CDs. We've got DVDs. We have all kinds of things to offer people. So the whole focus has changed, and now people come for programming as well.
So this is another way of bringing the community together in Correct. A really wonderful way.
And wonderful and free.
Now, one of the things I love about the East Bank Regional Library is that it has a marquee, you know, where authors can go and see their names in lights.
We actually have two marquees. We have one at the East Bank Regional Library, and then we also have events at the big library on the West Bank, the West Bank Regional Library. So we have these two marquees, and they are great. Now, as you can imagine, authors don't always get the respect that they need and deserve. And so sometimes that sign makes up for it big time because they go out and they take a picture of their name, which is literally in lights.
I know. It's thrilling. Very kind of you to do that.
Thanks. No problem.
We've been talking with Chris Smith, who's the manager for adult programming at the Jefferson Parish Library. Mark your calendar for the second annual Jefferson Parish Library Mystery Writers Readers Festival, Saturday, August 6th from 9:30 to 3 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. And it's all free. Chris, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
There are so many songs about books, songs inspired by specific authors and their works, songs that use books as a metaphor for life experience, and songs that show us how many ways books and reading are a part of life. Annie Lennox pays tribute to the Dracula myth in Love Song for a Vampire.
Come into these arms again and love.
Sometimes the best summer escape is a trip back into history. Here are two second novels that caught my eye last week, and both are fine historical fiction. Jesse Burton is the author of the New York Times bestselling novel The Miniaturist, set in the Dutch art world of the 17th century, and she follows that up with The Muse, set in London in the swinging 60s and Spain during the turbulent 1930s, leading up to the Spanish Civil War with World War II on the horizon. Odell Bastian, a young Trinidadian emigre, is trying to make her way as a writer in London, working in a shoe store when she gets a break, an entry-level secretarial job at the Skelton Institute of Art. Her boss is the elegant and enigmatic Marjorie Quick, who takes on the role of Odell's mentor and patron. Odell's chance encounter at a friend's wedding leads to the discovery of a painting by a mysterious Spanish artist of the 30s. Then the hunt is on for its provenance. Meanwhile, the painting's backstory unfolds as a young woman, Olive Schloss, is attempting to paint in her parents' attic in Arezzuelo, Spain. Her father is a Vietnamese art dealer and her mother is an English heiress, and their troubled marriage is a trap for Olive, who wants only to go to art school. The Schlosses' lives become intertwined with brother and sister Teresa and Isaac Robles, children of their landlord. Teresa becomes the family's housekeeper, while Isaac combines a life of art with fanning the flames of revolution. All of this tends toward tragedy, but toward art as well. The Muse balances great passages of female introspection, showing us women thinking about their moments in history. It describes the life and choices of creative women with compassion and insight. One of them wants to bring her work forth. One wants to hide it under a pseudonym. Who or what is the muse here, really? And does it matter as long as we follow her where she leads? Can the work really be everything? These are the questions you'll be left with after the last page is turned. Odell Bastian's lively, questioning voice lingers on, the story of a woman who knew, as she says, that sometimes to be lucky, you have to be ready. History is also center stage in Leaving Lucy Pear by Anna Solomon, the author of The Little Bride. The story opens with an unforgettable scene. A frantic young mother, Beatrice Haven, races through the darkness, babe in arms, to leave her daughter underneath a tree in a pear orchard. Why? Because she knows that a family of thieves will be coming to steal the fruit, and she counts on them to take in the infant, which they do. For Bea, this is better than surrendering her baby to the Jewish orphan's home. So the baby, Lucy Pear, becomes part of the Murphy family in 1917. Beatrice goes away to school, and life in Gloucester, Massachusetts winds on. 10 years later, when Beatrice, her dreams dashed, comes home to care for her aging uncle, Ellen Murphy comes to work for her. Ellen's life is complicated. She's a moonshiner. She's having an affair with a mayoral candidate and quarry manager Josiah Story. He doesn't offer her legitimacy, but jobs. Then he has an excuse to whisk her away in his car. Beatrice and Ellen have a strained relationship, to say the least, but a kind of friendship and understanding evolve over time. And what of Lucy, meanwhile? She knows she is different from the rest of the Murphys, but she loves them, disguising herself as a boy to work in the quarry, ducking her father in name only Roland Murphy's unwelcome advances. She dreams of escaping Massachusetts and heading north to Canada, and she won't stop until she comes face to face with her real mother. This is a thoughtful examination of class in the early 20th century, of the great divide that separates a prosperous Jewish family and an Irish working class family. It's also a look at the temperance movement and the ways in which strictures on the lives of women led to stress and depression, the differences between what women hoped for and what they got. Anna Solomon is wise in the ways of mothers and daughters, the ties that bind, the gulfs that separate. Leaving Lucy Pear offers unforgettable characters and many small, meaningful, emotional moments set against the backdrop of larger history. And Lucy Pear, that strong, smart girl, is a character to remember and to root for. Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. James Carillo, a professor of education at Southeastern Louisiana University and author of Teaching with Purpose, presents a workshop Thursday, August 4th at 6 and signs his book starting at 5 at Barnes & Noble Metairie. John Broven signs the new edition of Rhythm and Blues in New Orleans, Friday, August 5th at 6 at Octavia Books. Today's guest, poet Nicole Iden, reads from and signs I Am One of You, Sunday, August 7th at 2 at Garden District Bookshop, and again Wednesday, August 10th at 6 at Maple Street Bookshop. Jefferson Parish Library holds its second annual literary festival with a Mystery Writers and Readers Festival, Saturday, August 6th at East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. The event starts at 9:30 with a talk by Harriet Swift, New Orleans and the Detective Novel, Why So Few, and continues with panel discussions featuring Colleen Mooney, Laura Cayuette, Kent Westmoreland, Alexandria Weiss, Barbara Colley, Carl Baker, Bill Lofelm, Steve Patrick, Greg Heron, and ends with a masterclass by Michael Allen Zell. And it's all free. And coming up, as part of the Architecture and Design Film Festival, Guy Carwile discusses and signs The Modernist Architecture, Friday, August 12th from 12:15 to 1 at the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities Lecture Hall, 938 Lafayette Street. And Press Kabakoff discusses and signs Revitalizing Cities, the HRI Vision, Saturday, August 13th at 3:30 p.m. at the Carver Theater, 2101 Orleans Avenue. And ongoing, submissions are now open for the Tennessee Williams New Orleans Literary Festival's Writing Contest. There are three. The 31st Annual One Act Play Contest, which will be judged by University of New Orleans faculty in the Film, Theater, and Communication Arts Department. The 7th Poetry Contest with Judge Peter Cooley. And the 9th Fiction Contest with Judge Dorothy Allison. For complete information, check out TennesseeWilliams.net. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading.